Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
That'd be kind of amazing. Like, you know what? I don't want you to listen.
I don't want you to listen to this. I actively... Oh, except now Charlton starts it as we're being jerks. We want all of you to listen to everything. Pay no attention to what that man behind the curtain said. Jerk. Gee, God.
Exactly.
Charlton Thorpe. Jerk.
Oh,
hey, everybody,
nice
I'm Kyle
Rizdahl. How many times do I have to tell you?
That's
be
right.
Nice
welcome
to
back
engineers.
To Make Me Smart, where we that's right, where we make the day make sense. And you know he's sitting there looking at the clock going, 3, 2, boom, here
oh,
we
yeah.
go.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm Molly Wood. Thanks for joining us. It's Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. I've been calling today DGAF Thursday, and for those of you who know what that is, you know what I'm talking about. Which means
yes.
The news fix might be a little spicy and or dark placey. Hopefully,
yep.
if you sent yep. us Make Me Smiles, and one of you did. We'll have you smiling by the end of the show. It has been, I mean, I think we should acknowledge right now that even though we are not a politics podcast, like just the sort of sheer insanity at the Washington level, I think has added yet another layer of just delightful stress and madness to the week.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right. And it's just
so like turn it off. Honestly, turn it off because you do not need the blow by blow of whether America is somehow going to ruin America. You don't need it. Just wait for the like breaking news alert that's like did or did not.
America has ruined America. This just in from the New York Times.
This just in.
Okay. Let's go. Why don't you go first?
Oh, my goodness. You know, many times when there's a hearing in Congress and Facebook has to come and answer for the things that it has done and give the bleepity blop. It doesn't feel that meaningful. I got to say, like, kudos to the Wall Street Journal for bringing us, I almost hesitate to say this out loud, but for bringing us the closest we've ever been to the possibility of accountability for this company.
Oh, yeah.
Because like by revealing all of these internal documents and causing Congress, these internal documents, of course, we've talked about this several times, but in case you're just joining us, welcome. Hooray. You're going to love it. the stories that they published called the Facebook files that made it pretty incontrovertible that Facebook has been made aware more than once of the damages that it can cause, ranging from, you know, sex trafficking to organized crime to damaging the self-esteem of kids and so on and so forth, resulted in hearings today that also sort of resulted in Facebook kind of shockingly, like on purpose, releasing and the Wall Street Journal publishing, releasing its own internal research, right? So they were like, okay, well, here are the annotated slides of the original research that we conducted, and they're very proud of this. Like, we're doing this research because we really want to know. And then they release it with these annotations, these notes on the side of every single slide that are basically like, no. I don't know how many of you have.
sorry. Because
that's what they say. That's what they say. Like, I don't know how many of you have engineers in your lives, but I have a couple, and one and two in particular tend to sort of respond to things with like, no. And those things might be like, I feel this way. No. And that's all.
Oh my God.
It's literally
It's really fun.
I'm not an engineer, but that is the role I play in those conversations that people have with me. People mostly,
you're the
my female friends, and my wife will be like, oh, I'm feeling this. No.
Exactly. No, it helps if you turn it into a family joke. So tell your family they should just like gang up on you on holidays. But that's all I could think about when I was reading this, right? It would be like, for example, you know, a third of teens generally say this is terrible and we're having a really hard time and it makes us feel bad. And then the notes on the side are like, no, this actually doesn't say that. And even if it says that, it's only this many. And then they only said that. I mean, it's like, I believe somebody on Twitter described it as like utterly divorced from reality. Because in every case, some note comes in. Work and school stress has the highest reach for teenagers, right? Over half of them experience sleep issues, body image issues, sadness, and financial stress. And then the notes will be like, no, these screening questions weren't about experiences on Instagram or related to Instagram specifically, but actually whether a person had these. So they commissioned research and then they assigned a team, probably for Mark Zuckerberg's benefit, to go and just like contradict every single slide of the research. Yeah. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Yep. You got to go read it.
And Congress, just crazy.
Despite some whiffs today, was having none of it for the most part. A rare moment of bipartisanship.
That's good. That's good that they're not having any of it, right? Because for too long, as you and I have talked about a gazillion times, it's been, oh, we're really sorry, we'll do better. And here we are. You know,
and now they're not saying sorry anymore. That's their new strategy, which is great because you know what? That's to just get us a step closer to are you actually going to do anything about this? We shall see.
Yeah. We shall see. Yeah. Okay. You going to keep going to your third one here or you want to, are you good?
Or the second one, well, I do. So I tweeted about this. So I think I know normally I don't tweet my business, but it was just one of those. I was upset and angry. So the news peg, first of all, is that there's a story on NBC News about how COVID is killing rural Americans at twice the rate of people in urban areas. We like they're much like with Facebook, we shouldn't need any more data to tell us how stark this divide is. The Times, I think, had a piece, David Leonhardt from The Upshot, calling it red COVID, which I think at this point is almost what it has to be called, given these disparities, but there are also disparities in places where there isn't robust health and education and diet to start with, and then you have low vaccination rates and all these things that are happening. And it's this quote from this story by this head of the National Rural Health Association said, like, I almost want to cry just saying it, we've turned many rural communities into kill boxes. Yeah. And there's no movement towards addressing what we're seeing in many of these communities, either among the public or among governing officials, which gets me to the thing I tweeted, which is that on Monday, my mother, who's fully vaccinated but elderly and immunocompromised, had to go to the ER with COVID pneumonia and super low blood. I mean, I can talk about it now because they think they might release her tomorrow after giving her every drug imaginable. She had monoclonal antibodies twice. She had the steroids, like I call it the presidential package. Yesterday, she was at the stage, you know, when Trump made the Secret Service drive him around in the suburban.
Yeah.
That was kind of my mom yesterday. She was real hepped up on steroids. Remdesivir, like all of it. All of it. And they just today took her off oxygen to see if she can breathe well enough on her own to go home today or tomorrow or the next day. I mean, she was like, it was a real close call. And it was a real close call because she lives in an area that doesn't have herd immunity. It has super low vaccination rates. Right. And she was in the hot, it took them 15 hours to find her a hospital bed. That's another thing they talk about in this article, that there's nowhere to send people and they often can't transfer them to places with better care because those places are full. The hospital she's at has 80 COVID patients. 4 of them are vaccinated.
And of course, you could not get on a plane, even if you had been so inclined, because you've got, you know, work and a child and all this. You can't get on a plane because you can't go in the hospital to see her, right? Do I have that
right? Can't go in the hospital to see her. Yep. And neither could her husband, who also has COVID. And also, so it's not like we could go stay there. He isn't, you know, I mean, it's just, It's like the it's the American story playing out almost 2 years into this pandemic. Almost like minute for minute, right? They can't find a bed. The ICUs are full. The like, thank God the drugs were actually available, because if they hadn't been, I don't know. But we cannot continue to like sort of not, I don't know, be honest about this divide and what it's doing to people. And I don't know that like shame and rage is, I've had a lot of rage and I've wanted to shame a lot of people, but I don't think that's how we get out. I really don't.
Doesn't work. We've talked about that. Doesn't work. It's not
like
going to work.
We need radical love so that people feel safe to take care of themselves when they're being told not to for somebody else's benefit.
Yeah. Okay. Deep breath. We'll take a little turn. I'm going to do
Your
a
turn.
Little different news. Okay.
Let's talk about the mail. I can't wait.
Here's one that I saw, and I said, well, I got to put that in there because it's really going to bug Molly in the kindest and most loving way. It's going to bug you. So here's the deal. Starting tomorrow, and let's back up for a minute. Ms. Wood has had many, many, many news items, which were about the United States Postal Service and Louis DeJoy, the Trump appointee, who's still somehow in charge of the U.S. Postal Service. Yes, I know it's the Board of Governors. Don't at me. Anyway, starting tomorrow, first-class mail delivery, the standard for delivery will go from 1 to 3 days, if you mail it, for first-class letters and periodicals, to 1 to 5 days. Okay, so we've known for a while that mail is slowing. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. The Postal Service says, no, that's actually a good thing because it's going to make things more predictable and reliable, even if it's just a little more slow. That's what I got. That's what you call a spin.
Okay.
Little lemonade out of lemons. Lemonade out of lemons. And I put that in there just
that
to.
That guy is just winning. That guy is just
constant
continuing
updates.
To sit on his little mushroom.
And let's remember, he runs a company that's in direct competition with the United States Postal Service, which is the root cause of all the airtime he's gotten on this podcast. Okay. Mm-hmm. My second and more substantive one is this. We learned today, and I'm sorry to have to drag you back into the news, but it's kind of relevant in a much bigger picture kind of way. So Congress is going back and forth on $3.5 trillion. Joe Manchin thinks this. Kyrsten Sinema thinks this. $1.5 trillion, blah, 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 whatever, right? So this morning, Politico gets its hands on I can only call it a deal sheet that Joe Manchin sent to Chuck Schumer this summer about what Manchin will accept and the conditions for accepting it in some kind of infrastructure plan. And right at the top of the page, okay, top line, $1.5 trillion. We're going to start a debate no earlier than October the 1st this year, which, oh, by the way, is tomorrow, and goes down to another list of preconditions. And then he says, Federal Reserve ends quantitative easing. Okay, so this is a member of Congress putting as a condition for his vote the Federal Reserve ending its big bond buying program. Okay.
What?
Now.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, a couple of things that I have to say about that. Number one, by statute, the Federal Reserve is an independent agency. Mm-hmm. Number two, so Manchin wants interest rates to go up. Okay. That's what's going to happen when the Fed stops buying all those bonds. Okay. Fine. But number three, let's flip this around. And let's say that somebody wanted the Federal Communications Commission to reinstate Ajit Pai's policy on net neutrality. That's fundamentally what's happening here, right? Is that the Congress is saying, hey, you, independent agency charged with regulatory oversight of XYZ part of this economy, do what I want, or I'm not going to vote for this big other thing that affects the entire economy. And that, to me, that's quite something. That is quite freaking something.
And it's one person out of 535. Right.
Yeah. I find that kind of gobsmacking.
Who, by the way, I think received, is still, there was, like, now people are starting to say, hey, I noticed that you are still getting all this money from this energy company that you founded.
Oh, yeah.
Getting dividends from that and the, just saying there's a lot of climate stuff in there and there's a lot of fossil fuel money floating around. Yeah, I follow Justin Amash on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
He is a former member of Congress. Yeah, libertarian.
Yep.
And he has been a really outspoken and very interesting critic of the way that Congress works. For example, the fact that a bill like this
And it's actually super interesting reading, and maybe it's up our alley. I don't really know. But what he talks about is how representative government is not, in fact, at all. And not just because of, like, corruption or that, you know, or big, you know, lobbying and all the money that flows into to politician coffers, but because leadership of each party goes into a room, crafts a bill, brings it out, and a lot of times the rank and file, certainly in the House where there are tons of them, but also in the Senate, they don't see it. They don't know what's in it. They don't have floor debates where everybody can, like, introduce amendments and go back and forth, and, you know, a process would occur and you might come out with a bill that in fact represents what the entire, you know, congressional body might want to happen. And he was pointing out on Twitter that that's exactly the reason that this particular bill right now can be held up even when the Democrats have a slim majority by two people. Because if you just brought it to the floor the way the Congress was supposed to work and said, okay, fight it out, right? Thunderdome.
Yep.
That then you would sort of be forced to get to something more representative as opposed to, like, I want interest rates to go up. Why? Because I'm invested? Like, what is that?
Because I said so. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's easy to blame the people, the individuals, but it's also the system.
System. It's a hot mess. For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Bonkers. Just bonkers.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Let's do the world's quickest
make me
smile.
I got to make me smile. You got to do you got to make me smile? All right.
Okay. I do. This one thing made me laugh.
Good.
Just literally going to read it. Thank you to Brian Richardson at Silicon Chef on Twitter, who sent me a screenshot of trending in the United States from earlier today. And I'm just going to read this because this is the timeline that we're in right now. Lindsay Lohan partners with K9 Cartel to auction off an NFT of her furry-themed avatar, also known as a fursona.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. I have no comment on that at all except fursona.
Fursona. What's my fursona?
If you would like there to be higher quality Make Me Smile items on our show.
Nice turn. Nice
why,
turn.
Thank you. Or if you want to share something that made you smile. I mean, actually, that really did make me laugh out loud. So thank you, Silicon Chef, for sending it. Do exactly what he did. Send it to us. Sometimes it's hard for us to find them because we're doom scrollers by nature.
Yeah.
But sure. Also, we care what amuses you. Record and send us a voice memo or an email, makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can call us and leave us a voicemail. Our number is 508-827-6278, 508-U-B-S-M-A-R-T.
And with that, we're done. Back tomorrow for Economics on Tap, the YouTube live stream. We'll do some Discord as well, 3:30 Pacific time. Check your local listings wherever else you are. And if you don't want to miss the show, by the way, subscribe to this podcast. You get new episodes straight to your feed and into your brain.
Boom.
We should make that work somehow.
It's only a matter of time. We're so close to the Matrix.
That's
so
right. Close. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. At least we got the engineer right today.
Donna Tam is in the senior producer chair today and says she should have sent us cakes. And the executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves.
A little host management there, Donna. Not trained among
them. When in doubt.
Well, I mean, we kind of are.
Always send cakes. That's so bananas. I cannot believe it. Wow. Yeah. I'm looking at this now, the deal sheet.
Oh, it's crazy.
He's feeling his oats. That guy's feeling his oats.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.